morning very long, but I can tell you this. You're in for a good one. Please make welcome Ken D. from La Mesa, California.
Hi, I'm Ken, and I'm an alcoholic. Or hi, y'all. I'm from New York, so it's not going to sound like real South. Now I live in California. I want to thank you and Rick and all the folks on the committee for inviting me to come out. It's always nice to stand in front of one of these things and not have to enter a plea. And I want to thank Al and Fred for meeting us at the airport and being our host for the weekend. It's been real exciting. When I got off the plane and I saw Al and Fred, they reminded me of those movies where someone says, "We'd like for you to get back on that plane." And really the only part of life we'd like to see of you is your back, you know. And it's been great. And seeing Skinny here and all the folks. I was watching them give out these awards, and you know, the program said we're dedicated to the newcomer tonight or for the weekend. And I thought, geez, you know, none of these are newcomer awards. TV sets, tile, wallpaper. Makes it sound like you have some place to call home. You know? I always think, you know, my mind is, you know, I'm unscarred by education, which you'll find out in a hurry. And my mind just goes in its own direction, you know. I'm kind of like the guy who made the pact with the devil, where the devil meets this guy and he says, "I want to make a pact with you." And the guy, being a real alcoholic, says, "What's in it for me first?" And the devil says, "Well, what's in it for you is," he said, "while you're alive, I'll give you all the alcohol you want in whatever quantity you want, whatever name brand you want, as often as you want." The alcoholic smiles and said, "That sounds pretty good." He said, "Now, what do I give you?" And the devil says, "Well, when you die," he said, "I take your soul and you spend eternity in the fires of hell." And the alcoholic says, "Okay, what's the catch?" You know? You know? You know? And that's the kind of mind I have, you know. I thought if you're going to give newcomers awards, like if you're going to have a drawing, you should have like maybe a weatherproof dumpster cover, you know, and, you know. Maybe tailor-made Venetian blinds for a 62 Pinot, or, you know, stuff that, you know, $10 worth of gasoline, you know, 90 days of free coffee at the local coffee shop, you know, something that could keep them going for a while, you know, like TV is like, yeah, I really got a place to go to, you know. You ever try to see them hook up a TV in a dumpster? it just doesn't seem to work. I mean, that just doesn't work real good. I am fresh from the convention that was held in San Diego, which is where I live, and I'm going through what they call PCS, post-convention syndrome. You know, I found myself just driving down to the convention center to tell people there are no meetings, and, you know, I have no business there anymore. It's all over with. But I want to tell you that while it was going on, it was something that was really exciting, because for those of you who were there, you know, we had a chance to see all these flags brought in from all these different countries. And I was sitting there with a fellow who's Iranian and a fellow who was Jewish, and I said, "Where else could you see the Iranian flag followed in by the Israeli flag and nothing blows up?" You know, like, that's only in AA. You know, that's the only place you see that kind of stuff. And after you folks left, the papers just wrote about how good it was to have these people here and how honest they were and how clean they were. We were the first outfit to ever have a major event like that at the stadium and clean up after ourselves. You know, usually they have professional crews, and the guy said, "Well, we have 200 people that will come in, and they'll start in the upper tiers, and they'll work their way down, and in 8 hours they'll have the place cleaned up," and they had a price for it. And AA said, no, we'll clean it up ourselves. We'll get 1,000 people start all at once and just get through with it, you know. And so it was that kind of thing. And then after the AA convention was over, the police were reporting things like, you know, the only thing they could report from the stadium is there was 3 huggings. You know, people were going up and hugging the cops. And I don't know, the numbers, you hear varying numbers, but somewhere between 55 and 65,000 people were at the stadium. And they normally have 75 policemen and 300 pro staff people there. And for the AA convention, they had 10 policemen and 25 pro staff people. And And the only reason they had them there mostly was to give directions. And they sang a song that was real important to me, you know. I was watching the flags as they were coming in, and I remembered that song by John Lennon where he said, you know, imagine there's no country, no religion, nothing to kill or die for, just the brotherhood of man. And that's what this was. This was the brotherhood of man. Just a lot of people getting together for a real positive thing, everybody on the same page, and for a whole week we didn't notice each other's blemishes. Then as soon as the convention was over, the gloves came off. Okay, now let's get back to it, you know. But it's amazing to me how you can come to these things, and I enjoyed all the speakers, you know, starting out with Karen last night and Nancy and Martha, and it's an amazing thing to me that the theme of this is a powerful living. And all of the Big Book talks about is our lack of power. You know, lack of power, that's our dilemma. You know, but there is one who has all power. And, you know, I like the words that they use in the Big Book because I'm unscarred by education. You know, the word all doesn't throw me, you know. There are some people it really concerns. But it says there is one who has all power, which means there's none left for me. Whatever this entity is, it has all the power, you know. It's like we had to let go of all our old ideas. And you'll always have a newcomer say, well, just how many is that? Well, you know. Well, let's go back and read that word. It's a sneaky word. All, you know. And I, fortunately, since I'm unscarred by education, I belong to a meeting where most of the folks who come are unscarred by education, you know. You know, in our group you say, there's a dead bird. We all look up, you know. It's like, you know. When we give our sobriety date, we go, you know, just not the brightest bulbs in the room. And I had a guy the other day. I took this guy. We were putting something together. I took this guy into a store, and the name of the store is Everything's a Dollar. Now, I like to shop there because you don't have to worry about, you know, something being mismarked. And you never have to wait in line for a price check because it's like, everything's a dollar. And, you know, he picks something up. First thing he says is, how much is this? You know? You know, and I love hanging out with guys like that because they're right in the middle of something when they realize what they're saying. You know, and I love to laugh because there's a couple of things I know about laughter that most people don't know, and that is you cannot laugh and think at the same time. So every time you're laughing or I'm laughing, I include me also, I'm getting a respite from me, you know. If there were a song for AA, it would be, I'm always on my mind, I am all, you know. And the other thing is that when we're laughing now, we know it's a healing thing. You know, we produce endorphins, and we do all these things that help us fight pain, and it's real, real good. And, you know, like I volunteer in the hospice program with working with people who are terminally ill, and laughter's a big thing there because, you know, it's like you're getting down to the end. And there's a time to be serious, but there's also a time to enjoy every second you're here. You know, the gift of sobriety is great, but it's coupled with the gift of life. You know, and sometimes we just take it for granted. It's like, well, you know, I'll do that next year. I'll do that in 5 years. I'll make that amend in 2 years. And we always think we're going to have more time than we actually have. And if you talk to the old-timers, they'll tell you time goes by pretty quickly when you look back on it. And you can always tell when you're talking to an old-timer and a newcomer. A newcomer's always talking about what they lost. You know, I lost this, I lost that. You know, and the old timers are always talking about what they're trying to get rid of. You know, I'm trying to get rid of this, I'm trying to get rid of that. You know, like, they just want to get rid of it. You know, they want to get caught up in all that other stuff. And the other thing you notice about newcomers and old timers is that they have a different approach to life. You know, newcomers think a lot. And thinking is what you do when you don't want to take action. You know? You're like, yeah, I'm thinking about it. I've been thinking about it since, I guess, 62, maybe, 63. You know, just don't do anything about it, you know, because heaven forbid it just gets done. And one of the nicest things about getting sober and being sober a while is you get a chance to work with other people. And you get a chance to see them go through all things in life. And you get a chance to enjoy life. And you realize that alcoholics kind of come at life very differently. I mean, I still have this thought process when I see things, it registers different. You know, I see a sign in a restaurant that says, no shoes, no shirt, no service. Now, to me, that means pants are optional. You know, that's just what, that's just the way my mind works, you know, like it just goes like that. And it goes like that so quickly I don't even know it's gone like that, you know. And then I remember, it just went for a walk, you know. It just, my mind will just go for a walk and, you know, take a little vacation from me. And that was the thing that always put me and my wife, my ex-wife, at a disadvantage, because when I arrived home, she used to think I was there, you know. She just didn't understand. And this whole thing is perceptional. You know, I'm more convinced that in listening to people's shares that everybody goes through certain things, but it's what their perception of that thing is. You know, and that's what we carry over, is this perception. I mean, my wife would wake me up and say, "There's somebody outside." And I'd say, "Good, that's where they belong." You know, like, when they come inside, give me a poke, you know, because that's where they belong, outside, you know. And what she was saying was not what I was hearing, you know. She used to say things like, "That's your second drink." And I'd say, "Honey, why don't you just forget me and go on and eat your breakfast?" You know, like, it's like we were just on different sides of things, you know, and it was always my perception of what was going on. And you know, it was the same way. I grew up in Brooklyn, and when I was living there, crime was organized. It's not that way today. It's very unorganized, you know. And they used to say, "Hey, you know, he fell asleep in the trunk of a car. He deserved to be shot." I mean, that was, you know, that was the kind of logic we had, you know. Gun control, man, hold it with two hands, you know. It was, you know, that's just who we were, you know. Guys would say, "How far is it to the subway?" We go, "We don't know. No one's ever made it," you know, like a... But those are the kind of things that went on, you know. It was just, you know, so I grew up like that. And my mom used to look at me, and, you know, my mom knew me best of anyone that ever lived in this world. And she knew that I shouldn't be thinking, long before I got to AA. Because she used to, you know, we had a little 12-inch Admiral television at one time, back in the 50s. And like, I'd be watching television, or not watching television, and my mind would just be going. And my wife, my mom, if she walked into the room and the TV was off, she'd turn it on. She'd say, "Watch TV, you know, don't think." Because I could be right in the middle of a bad idea and get a worse one. You know, like I just thought like that, like, you know, yeah. And more was always the solution, if we just had more. And I just never had to put anything together. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, my perception of things were different because, you know, right off the bat, everything here is paradoxical. You've heard this before, I'm sure, but in AA, everything is reversed. You know, you say to somebody, "How do you win?" "Oh, that's easy, you surrender." "Oh, okay. Wish I had thought of that." You know, "Now how do you keep this thing?" "Oh, you give it away." You know, "Don't make any judgments, but stick with the winners." You know? So you know, like, I think they have all this stuff just to keep you off balance, you know, like, give the old-timers an advantage, you know. And you don't know what's going on most of the time, and you're shaking your head like you do, you know. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that goes on. How many people in the room here tonight have less than a year? Now, look at that. Less than a year. God bless you. People who have less than a year are kind of like John Wayne Bobbitt, you know? When someone asked him, do you want to get back with your wife? And he said, one part of me says yes, and one part of me says no, you know? And that's the way newcomers are, you know? They want to get sober, but I really don't want to do a whole lot. And I'm not too sure I want to give up drinking yet, you know. And so you get a chance to watch them in action. And I don't know why people don't enjoy going to meetings. I mean, I think it's the best entertainment you can have. You know, you watch, you see all kinds of people. I mean, we had a meeting, the last big meeting we had before the International, we had close to 8,000 volunteers downtown at the Civic Center. And some guy said, "Look at this crowd, Ken. Look at these people." And I was looking, and all I kept thinking was, if you wanted to take over a third world country, this is exactly the group you'd put together. You know, like, you know, they're easy to motivate. All you got to do is tell them they can't do it. You know, you guys couldn't do that, you know. And then once they get hold of something, they don't know how to let go. You know, like, so you'd own Colombia forever or Guatemala or someplace. You know, like, they just wouldn't give it back. You know, like, yeah, it's ours. We took it, you know. And you see these people, and what I always enjoyed is that as you watch them over a period of time, and every speaker, starting with Karen on Friday night to Martha today to Nancy, all mention the same things. Something happened. Something happened. That's the key word from the big book. Something happened. You know, I was going along. I couldn't get sober, and then something happened. You know, you go into bookstores today, and you can read all kinds of literature about AA, you know, why this and that. I mean, everybody's writing a book about it. And the bottom line is, if you're trying to obtain sobriety, something happens. And we all give it a definition. We all try to tell each other what it is, but we really don't know what it is because we really don't know. It's just something happened. I was doing this, and then all of a sudden, I'm doing this. I was going in this direction, and somehow I'm starting to go in this direction. I could never do this, now suddenly I'm doing it. I could never stop, and now I haven't had a drink in a day. Something happened. And that something happened is the miracle of the gift of sobriety from God. Now, I don't ask me to explain that, because I have no more idea how it happens than anybody else. But it's a gift. And we all get invited to come to AA. It's kind of like an Agatha Christie deal. You know, we're invited, but we don't know by who. You know? And we all show up, and we don't know what we have in common, you know. But as time goes on, we find out, hey, this bozo just did what I did, you know. And that's why I come to meetings, because when you're drinking, you know, something happened. I mean, most people just don't get up in the morning and say, well, you know, I think I'm going to plan this day so it's catastrophic. So I lose everything I have acquired in the whole world, particularly hurt the people I love, and probably go to jail, you know. And I like to do that before the dinner hour, you know. You know, most people just, that's not their deal. They get up and just start out to do what they think is going to be a normal everyday day. And it just isn't, you know. And I used to hear people use terms, and I've done all this so I identify with it. It's just where you're at, stages. You hear people say things like, there's us in here, and then there's the normal people out there. Watch my lips. There are no normal people, you know, nowhere, you know. There are just people who have not shared with you, you know. As soon as they share with you, you say, you know, you get on the phone and go, Bill, thanks, I needed that, you know. I mean, I go into the stores, I see what normal people buy. Normal people buy things like mint-flavored dog biscuits. Mint-flavored dog biscuits, you know. I want my dog to have good breath. I put Lavoris in the toilet, you know. Like, I don't, you know, it's a whole different thing. And when I came to AA, my mama used to say, you know, drunk or sober, you are no day at the beach, you know. Because I used to just get caught up in this stuff, and I didn't know. But I knew something when I started to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because being totally unscarred by education, I just read what was in there. You know, I just took it and read it from the beginning to the end, including all the stories. And I didn't try to editorialize it. I didn't try to leave stuff out. I just took the words as they were written. And what I could see was that if I took these steps, which I started to take almost immediately, because that's the way we did it then, is that these steps, when I took them, would evict me from my hiding places, and it would do away with the props that I had established in life. When I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous, there was no doubt in my mind, as I look back on it today, that I arrived here under an assumed identity, living in a delusional state. You know, I had no idea who I was or what was going on, but it never kept me from having an opinion about it. You know, I just jump right up, you know, And I arrived here, you know, with a barroom facial, because I always had a habit in the middle of arguing, when, particularly if I saw I was going to lose or I just got tired, I would just kind of question his ancestry. And that immediately changed the whole context of what was going on, you know. You'd start grabbing each other. And, you know, some of the best recollections I have of being meditative was sitting in the emergency room. You know, and it's like 2 in the morning, it's real peaceful. And you're saying, like, I wonder if holding that position in the bar was all that important. You know, like, I wonder if that little area that this guy just wanted to share was worth all this blood, you know? And I'd get to see things somewhat clearly, but the next day I'd be right out running with the dogs. And I just didn't know. There's a word that started in AA several years ago, maybe 10 years ago. It's a nice word, nothing wrong with it, but it's called denial. People say, I'm in denial, he's in denial, she's in denial. It's a real wussy word, particularly for alcoholics. It's a real wussy word. That's why in the big book we use the word delusional. Now you look up the word denial. Denial says somebody who knows the truth and just has trouble accepting it. You know. You look up the word delusional. It's a psychopathic thought. Where the individual has no idea of the truth, you know. Couldn't find the truth if you gave it to them, you know. That's why we use the word delusional, you know. It's a much better word. In fact, in my group, when someone says, I'm in denial, we congratulate them because that's like spiritual growth, you know. You know, they're moving in the right direction. Rigorous honesty could be just around the corner, you know, like, hey, good, you're doing good, boy. Keep coming back, you know. You know, we're proud of you, you know. And when you interact with other people, you get to see them grow, and you get to see them from the very beginning, you know, and you find out that this thing works. Frank, who's your speaker tomorrow, mentioned the fact that when we had the countdown at the stadium for the international, you know, there were a lot of people standing with over 20 years of sobriety. And when they got to over 40 years there, I think a figure he gave me, maybe he'll give you that tomorrow, was like 126 pre-registered people or something who had over 40 years. That's the documentation of AA. It works. You know, it's simple. And then people want to write about, well, it really can't be explained logically. Of course it can. Otherwise it wouldn't work. You know, all truth is paradoxical, and the reason it's paradoxical is because it's the only way it can get past your mind. You know, we don't live in a logical world. If this was a logical world, men would ride side saddle. Yeah. You know? You know? Could you see the Duke riding off and in stagecoach? You know? But that's why we live in a totally illogical world. Anytime you get confused about that, just turn on the TV. You know, it's totally illogical. We have a woman in our area who just got arrested in L.A. for being a madam, and she's going to go to jail. The very next story was a woman who was with a famous movie actor. She got $800,000 in contracts. Same event. <You know? laughs> Same event. It's just perceptional, you know. And you say, wow, this is interesting. And so when I arrived here, the simplicity of AA was you just do the program. Don't try to bring so much from the outside into it, you know. Don't start going to sex without partners and, you know, just kind of focus on this thing, you know. Just stay focused right here. And what you'll come to find out is everything you need will be here. Because the program allows you to grow spiritually. It allows you to look at a set of events 10 years ago and see them differently today. And if you stay around another 10 years, you'll see them differently in 10 years. And what will happen is the anger that you had is replaced with love. And love is the best healing force in the world. It's more powerful than all the bombs put together. Because love is a thing that once you choose to do it, you immediately put the way you're living in danger. You cannot love and live the same way. You've got to change. It just happens that way. And what happens is you start finding out that life is just moment to moment. And you're not caught up in historical things. What happened 20 years ago or may happen in 20 years. You start living in the now. And what I like about the word now is that when you spell it backwards, it's W-O-N, one. When you take the word now and reverse it, it's one. And when you've learned to live in the now, you've won, because that's the whole purpose for being alive, is to keep our appointment with the present moment. And folks are running all over the place trying to figure out all kinds of other stuff. And that's why I liked AA, because I had a sponsor who, very much like Nancy's sponsor, say, sit down, shut up, and listen, you know? And the only time I got confused is when I thought. That's the only time I got confused. And I'd be sitting there, and then I'd be really out in deep water. And if you don't, you know, you hear people say Alcoholics Anonymous is too deep. Well, if it's too deep for you, come down the shallow end with me and the kids. You know, you can stand up anytime you get in trouble, and the water's much warmer. You know, and there's nothing to figure out because it's already laid out. I don't know about you guys, but I don't mean any disrespect, but I got to take this jacket off because it's about 110 up here. My sponsor said if you take your jacket off, you're showing disrespect, and he's not here. he's back in Brooklyn. I could care less, you know. Don't anybody call him, though, you know. And to show you where I was at when I first got here, you know, I got here in my sobriety date is July 5th of 1970. And when I got here, you know, I told my mom that was my sobriety date, and she said, that's good because you did everything on a 5th. And, you know, so it's very apropos that, you know, that you got into AA on a 5th. But I remember Bill Wilson died in January of 71, and they broke his anonymity in all the papers in New York. And I was so new that I thought, gee, the owner died. And I called up my sponsor. I said, I guess that's it. This whole thing's over now. The owner died. And he said, no, they're going to try to keep the meetings open for a while. Keep going, you know, like, you know. You know, you guys only catch this for about an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 10 minutes, one, an hour 45 minutes, somewhere in there. You know, I'm here all the time. And there's sometimes I'm looking at me, you know. And I said, I better get to a meeting, you know. And one of the things I figured out a long time ago, because I didn't bother try to figure it out, was just because it ain't real doesn't mean it ain't real, you know. And that's the way my mind is going all the time. You know, like a strobe light's going, yeah. So I can identify with newcomers real easy. Because newcomers, there's always a part of your mind that's going to the liquor store, you know. And people forget so quickly, you know. It's like how many times you're at a meeting and you hear somebody say, I haven't been to a meeting in a long time, and I feel real good that I'm here, and I don't know why I stopped coming because I always feel good when I come. And then they forget to come again. You know, they want to make cameo appearances in AA. I'm here. Now you're there, you know. We're still here. And I like to watch people because I love people today. I couldn't say that when I first got here. I remember a 12-step call that my sponsor took me on. It gives you a good idea where I was at the time. I was about 2 months sober, and my sponsor was one of these guys who just kind of engulfed me, took me into his life, invited me to his home for dinner. My wife and kids had moved out of state for their own safety, and it was a good move. And she was kind of like, get on the plane. Yeah, we'll be right back. Wait for us. We'll call you. But that was a smart move. But I just had this kind of like silent rage. Now, you'd never know it because I had a way of laughing the most when I was about ready to shoot somebody. You know, I bang. And because I get tired of arguing, particularly when I saw I was going to lose. You know, if they were on with the truth and facts, it immediately put you at a disadvantage. That's why I never liked to argue with my wife, because it always would end up me and her against me. And because she just had the truth. And so I remember he took me on this call, and he never asked me to do anything up to then. You know, he was constantly doing for me, and he said, I can't park here, so you go and get this guy and bring him out to the car, and I'll drive around the block and pick you up. And they used to call it putting a hit on him. You know, that was the neighborhood I lived in. They didn't say 12-step call. They said, go put the hit on this guy. So to me, putting a hit on someone meant he came to the meeting. So this guy's wife answered the door, and she proceeded to tell me her husband was the drunk, and she called him. And anyway, make a long story very short, by the time my sponsor drove around the block, this guy had decided he didn't want to go to the meeting. I'd be letting my sponsor down. So I snag him through the screen door. And I'm kind of beating him with a garbage can lid. And when my sponsor pulls up and beeps the horn, you know, I don't know whether to let up, because he doesn't look like he's ready to go to this meeting yet. And he's beeping the horn, so I go out to the car, and he had caught this action. So when I got in the car, and we just took off, and we drove a couple of blocks, and he said, would you do me a favor? I said, yeah. He said, don't ever call that a 12-step call, you know? He said, would you do me a second favor? I said, yeah. He said, don't tell anybody this happened. And the guy's wife thought it was a pretty good idea because she was through the screen going, yeah, yeah, yeah. So at least I had one person who understood the seriousness of this call, you know. And I used to just get that way, you know. I just wouldn't start out that way, just kind of get that way. And things that I thought funny, other people just didn't think were funny. You know, pulling up to the Holland Tunnel and saying, I'll have French fries and a milkshake in the middle of rush hour. And the little Port Authority guy would say, we don't serve any food here. And you say, you better get some. The line's really backing up. You know? Now, the guys I travel with thought that kind of stuff was funny. But you'd be surprised how the police just have a whole different idea of that. You know, just a whole different idea. And I can remember my brother and I going to Coney Island, and there was a big miniature golf course there, and I over by the steeplechase area. And I just don't know where it came from, but I took a little pint of Seagram's, and I got into the windmill. And as people hit their balls in, I threw them back. You know, nobody was getting through the windmill. Now, see, my brothers thought this was real funny. But when the police came, they had a whole different idea, you know. I felt like the original Rodney King, like, okay, I get the message, you know. Maybe it wasn't a good idea, you know. Maybe my brothers and me are wrong, you know. I'll own up to anything. But that's the way life kind of went for me. And, you know, none of that plays a role in my life today. I got here. I started doing the steps as were suggested to me. I had a sponsor. He said, okay, let's go through this. I started doing this thing, and things began to happen. Something happened, and it happened over a long period of time. I wasn't like a quick fix. I must know I'm in town. You know? But the deal was is that things began to happen, and I began to feel more at home with me. And at first, I didn't even know who I was. But I found myself doing things just for fun without being nasty about them. And I found myself thinking in terms of how this might impact somebody else. And I began to have what the book calls a God consciousness. You know, in the book, it's real clear there. It says, as we become conscious of his presence, we begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We are reborn. And that doesn't mean something new happens. It means something old is recreated. We're reborn. I went really back to who I was. You know, I don't get into arguments with people about this, but I love people who say in AA, I'm going to change me. If I could change me, I wouldn't need you guys. You know, if I had the power to change me, I wouldn't need you guys. I wouldn't have to come to meetings. I just never had that power. You know, I kind of look at it in nature. I am who I am. You know, I'm like a rose bush. If a rose wakes up in the morning and wants to be a chrysanthemum, it's a long day. It's a long day. You know, it's like the long haul, you know, because you're a rose, you know. And the other thing I found out is that this love thing, it's something that just happens to you over a period of time when you start not wanting to have your own way all the time. And the kids that I was separated from, that family and I got back together again after 18 months. And we had a run of about 10 years. And when we separated that time, those boys stayed with me. And I got to be a single parent for a while. And I got to raise these kids. They were teenagers then, but I got a chance to spend time with them. I got a chance to do all the things that a dad would want to do, but in many cases not have the opportunity to do. And as the fates would have it, you just never know. It's a day-to-day deal. In 93, my one son, who was out doing something he always wanted to do, entertain, was on a ship going around the world, a cruise ship, being paid to sing and dance. And I got a call from Norway. They were sending him home. He was real sick. And when he arrived home, it was July 8th of 93, and he was in full-blown AIDS. And he stayed with me for 2 months, and he died. And I had a chance to be there for him. And I had a chance to see him go through that process of losing his hearing and his eyesight and eventually his mind. And I knew even in the midst of that, there must be a loving God, and there must be a God with a great sense of humor, because my ex-wife started coming to my home, which was exciting. I got to meet my husband-in-law, you know? It was very exciting. And I had a chance to get another perspective of what this thing called life is all about. My son had neuropathy real bad, and it was so, they couldn't give him anything that would kill the pain. And he used to want to maintain his dignity as best he could, so he would crawl from the bed to the bathroom. And he had lost 70, 80 pounds. He had gone from like 185 down about 110 pounds. And he was so bony that I would put blankets and pillows on the floor so that he could crawl without hurting his legs. And it hit me one night as I was watching this happen in front of me that he was crawling on the floor to maintain his dignity. And I had crawled on the floor and lost my dignity. So crawling on the floor was neither good nor bad. It was just something that happens. And life breaks down to such simple things at times because for the first time in my life, as a result of all that happened here, I was no longer doing 24-hour days. Days had no beginning, they had no middle, they had no end. It was just ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. And the theme for AA in San Diego at the International was AA everywhere and anywhere. And it was based on the slogan that whenever anyone anywhere reaches out, we want the hand of AA to be there. I don't know how I would have gotten through this thing without AA. People started showing up. Guys who didn't do wash for themselves would do my wash. You know, people would cook meals. People would come and give me a break. So one woman gave massages. She came and she gave my son. It was like the AA community just realized that I couldn't do this thing by myself. And I couldn't. It was completely overpowering. And I got to be there that whole time. Be there. You know what I'm talking about? Being there. Not there, but being there. There was nothing else that was coming in front of that. And I remember my son going into a coma, and we moved him into the hospital, and they realized there was nothing they could do, and we moved him from the hospital into the hospice where I've been volunteering since 1983. And somehow I just never thought I'd end up with my son in the hospice. That was not why I started out in hospice. And he was able to regain consciousness 2 or 3 days before he died. And when he regained consciousness, he wanted to know where he was and what was going on. And his mom was there and his brother and myself. And we had to tell him where he was and what was going on. And I remember at that time him looking kind of dazed because the reality hit him. And he put his head to one side of the pillow. And he was in the world at that time. And when he brought his head back, he was of the world. And he thanked everybody for being there and being supportive. And he told me he loved me and that he was going to miss me. And at that moment, something inside of me, which had been there my whole adult life, just went away. Something happened. And when he died a few days later, his mom and I, left my husband-in-law outside. We went down to the little meditation chapel, and we sat and we held each other and we cried for about an hour. And something happened between us. There was a healing there that this was someone we both loved, and it was a pain that we were both sharing. And when I came home from there, right before I left, I said, you know, I don't know if I ever hurt you that I didn't make an amends for. But if I did, I want to make an amends now, because when I leave here, I don't ever want to take anything in me that seems angry again. I want to leave it here. And so we did that. And you know, from that point on, which was about two years this September the 7th, it was 93, and over those 2 years, my life in so many areas has just changed. And it's changed in a way that I now, for the first time, have a clarity of what life is. I always thought life was something you controlled, managed, projected, manipulated, and now I realize if you're lucky, you just get to live it. You just get to live it. And life gets so very simple. and you realize you're in tune with everything. You know, I have guys that come in, and they're great guys. I sponsor a psychiatrist. He's the sickest person I ever worked with, you know, because everything has to have a label. Everything has to have a process. And when you tell him, I don't know, he says, you're holding back, you know, like, you must know. You know, you were here, you're here 25 years, you must know. And that's the great pretense of AA. The longer you're here, the more aware you are of what you don't know. And the newcomers think that they just like plug in like, you know, VCR, give it to me. Yeah. And all you can say to them is all I have is my experience, strength, and hope. And I can share that with you. But you're going to go, if you want any truth in your life, you're going to go and have to get your own experience. And that's what this is about. I mean, when I see a guy like Skinny, the first thing that comes to my mind is AA probably not only added years to his life, but it added life to his years. You know, you suddenly have a whole understanding that you don't understand. And then people say, but you're saying you don't understand. Yeah, that's right. And that's the happiest I've ever been. You know, I tell guys, I don't know anything. I thought I knew something, but I was wrong. You know? And they look at you like, he's holding back. And did you ever tell people how much you knew and they try to just push you aside? Then when you tell them you don't know, they just flock to you. You know, it's like yeah, he knows. Yeah, he knows. He's just not telling us, you know? And that's the way people, because they're thinking. You know? They're just thinking. And so sometimes you know, you got to keep guys like that busy, so I make up stuff. You know? Just to keep them a little bit at bay, you know? Like this psychiatrist, he says, you got to tell me something, you got to tell me something, I'm going crazy. And so I make up stuff. And one of the things I remember hearing was there was a guy, he now does sports commentary on TV for football, John Madden. And John Madden used to coach the Oakland Raiders. And he used to say for years, right before the Raiders went out after halftime, he would say, he would look at the team and he'd say, okay, this half, let's forget the mule and just load the wagon. And guys would go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And guys would go into the Hall of Fame and never know what the hell that meant. You know, like, you know, Biletnikoff, and these guys would call and say, John, you know, like, coach, like, what does that mean? You know, and he didn't know. But the idea was it worked, and I remember him sharing that story. So now when guys come over to me at meetings, like particularly when you're trying to get a cup of coffee, it's like, I just tell them, the fish in the sea are not thirsty. And then you go get a cup of coffee, and you see some guy in the corner and say, yeah, it's so simple. The fish in the sea aren't thirsty, you know. And now I got guys who've made me up T-shirts like, what about the ocean and the rivers? And what about, you know, alcoholics just keep going with that stuff, you know? But the whole idea is that the mind leads you to believe that it's important. And it really isn't. You know? I sponsor a couple of medical doctors. One guy said the other day, how can you tell me not to think when it's so important? I said, well, okay. Let's look at it this way. While you and I are talking, you're breathing. Is breathing getting your consent? Your glands are secreting stuff. Are they calling you up and asking you if they should? Your whole blood chemistry is being made over. You know? Your kidneys are working. I mean, some of us even have to leave the room for one reason or another. Like, that's how much in charge we are. You know? Now, who's making that call? You know, we're like a spontaneous happening. We're happening all the time. And this mind thing is just tells us it's much more important than it is. And the reality of that is you learn to live right in this moment. You know, I just know, you know, that when I breathe out carbon dioxide, and the trees breathe it in. Then they give off oxygen that I breathe in. I mean, everything is in harmony. The only thing that tells me I'm out of harmony is what? My mind. You know, that's why they used to have all these acronyms, fear. My favorite one for fear is we forget everything's all right. You know, yeah, well, there must be something wrong. You know, we start dwelling on it till there is. You know, the prayer of the alcoholic is, dear Lord, please help me to overcome the self-imposed crisis that wasn't necessary. You know, that's really the prayer of the alcoholic. You know, one of the speakers mentioned that. You know, we create our own misery. And the only power we're ever given here is the power to help others. You know, we have recovered and we've been given the power to help others. It's never about us having this power for ourselves. And, you know, life gets so easy then. And you watch folks running around. And you get to see guys that have been around a while, and you get to watch them, and you see how simple life can become. We have a guy in our area who passed away 2 years ago. He came in when he was 50, and he died when he was 89, Lewis. Lewis was 39 years sober. And people used to go up to Lewis and say, "How you doing? How you doing?" And they said, one day we're at a meeting, and the topic was making a decision, and people were telling what they did and making a decision. I don't know how they ever got one made. You know, I inventory, I call my sponsor, I write the Pope, I go, you know, I go to Europe, you know. They called on Lewis, he went up, he said, "Well, I got a decision to make." Took out a silver dollar, he said, "I flipped this." He said, "Heads, I do it this way, tails, I do it that way. I'm 39 years sober, who cares?" So I went and sat down. I thought we should have closed the meeting right then, you know, like, you know, don't go any further. Lewis just gave us the answer, you know. And that's the way it is. It's like doing the simple things and not getting caught up in the process. And I have had to unlearn, and to me this is scary to tell the newcomers, but you come here with the idea you're going to learn a bunch of new stuff. That's not the deal here. You're going to have to unlearn a bunch of old stuff that never worked. And you pretend that it does work, and you pretend it's you. And those are the props, and until you get rid of those props, you can't really have an idea of who you are. And I watch people, you know, they're bogged down with fear, which is okay. But then you do the steps, and you go to meetings, and you watch the courage of others who go through things, and you get a little bit of courage of your own. You know, fear is like a dragon. It kind of keeps you away from your most valuable assets. Until you get through that fear, you never really get a chance to experience what life is all about. It's working without a net. You know, everything you think is a problem is not the problem. We are the problem. You know, and we make up other deals. You know, him, her, somebody else is to blame. The only thing I own in this world are the consequences of my actions. That's the only thing I own. You know, everything else I have come to find out, and everyone else in this world will be taken away from me someday. And the only thing I'll be left with, the only thing I get to keep, is what I gave away. That's the only thing I get to keep. You know, if you ever look at a hearse, see, you know, I've just never seen a U-Haul attached to one. You know? So the deal is get used up, you know. Don't try to become less vulnerable, become totally vulnerable, and then you won't be vulnerable. You know, open up completely. And don't get into reading so many books, you know. Oh, this is business, you know, this is the book of this decade, and this is the book here, and this is it's almost like AA. Don't you love that when people tell you that? It's just like AA almost. But it's not. You know, there's only, if I were to write a book, the title would be, "I'm an Ass, You're an Ass." That takes the pressure off everybody, you know. It's not like we have to work on anything. We start out fresh, you know, like, hey, this is just the way it is, you know. We don't have to figure anything out instead of constantly trying to figure stuff out. And life can get to be so peaceful. I mean, I get up in the morning, when my alarm goes off, I jump out of bed. Because there's one thing I know, and that is people die laying down. You know? 97% of the people who died in this country last year died laying down. So if your alarm goes off, get up. You know? Am I smart or what? You know, like... You just can't slip too much by this boy, you know. And now once you're up, go screw something up, because you don't want to lose your skills. And then you find out that most people don't notice you've even done this. You know, you get down to like reexamining it over and over and over again. And then you do the maintenance steps that are suggested in the program. At the end of the day, we constructively review the day. It doesn't say at the end of the day we destructively review the day. We constructively review the day. And where necessary, we make the amends. We've been placed in a position of neutrality. It doesn't really make a difference. If it goes this way, I'll be okay. If it goes this way, I'll be okay. As long as I'm doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It may not work out the way I think it should, but I'm always okay. And when I get some perception on it, I find out that it was probably good because it opens me up to something else. If you've never lost anything, then how do you know how the game works? You know, if you're constantly looking to win, then it's a funny game. You know, you got to lose once in a while. And when you lose, you find out that's when you win the most. Because that's the chance you get to see what's really needed. You know, I never knew I needed God until I realized God was all I had. I mean, I'm not that clever. I didn't get there right away. It took me 12, 15 years, you know. But I remember thinking at one time, that this just wouldn't work for me. And I was a year sober. And I thought, isn't that stupid? I'm already a year sober, and I don't think it's going to work. You know? You know, some of you heavy hitters will get that later. You'll be in your room. Yeah. We forget, and then we have to remember. And to me, that word remember means to join up, to become back to AA, to remember, become attached to the program again, hang out with the AA people, do the AA things. Don't be judging anybody, as somebody said today. You know, just do the deal. Just live life and allow everybody else to live life. And what you'll find out is that if you stay out of their way, most of the time they'll stay out of your way, you know. And you never don't have any power anyway. That's the funny part of it. We think, well, we're going to work on this. Visualize this, if you will. Alcoholics are like a flea on a log going down a river. And every now and again, the log goes around a bend in the river. And we think we're steering. You know? You know? And if you're a real alcoholic, you buy a commander's jacket and a captain's hat, and you have a whistle up the bridge, you know? That's the way we are. But, you know, we just don't have any power. And we develop this attitude that it's always our idea, even when it isn't. If you're going to be a successful alcoholic, you have to have that attitude. You can't have a surrender attitude. You know, I always think of the story of the mule guy. He had a little mule, and he was going through town. And he had a little pack horse, and he'd been out looking for gold. And out of the bar comes this alcoholic cowboy. And the alcoholic cowboy has on these two silver six guns. And he says to this guy, "Do you know how to dance?" And the gold guy says, "No, I don't." He said, "Well, you better learn." And he starts firing these guns. And the little miner starts dancing. And then finally the guns go click, click. At which point the miner pats his mule and pulls out a shotgun. And he says to the alcoholic, "Do you ever kiss a mule's ass?" And the alcoholic, without missing a beat, said, "No, but I always wanted to." You know, like, you know, that's the deal. You see, we hang on to the very end. You know, we're like people get thrown from a horse, and we grab hold of that little thing where you put your feet, and it's carrying you around the parking lot at Kmart, and you're hitting every speed bump. And people who love you and care for you are yelling, "Let go. Let go." And you're going, "Who, me?" You know? And instead of letting go, we go out and spend hundreds of dollars going to seminars to figure out how to enjoy the ride. You know? "Hey, I'll take a seminar on this." You know? And the deal is that it's too short for the seminar. Just let go. You know, it's like having a tug of war. If you don't hold your end, there's a lot less stress. You know, just let go. You know, and don't get caught up in that. And that's mentally what it amounts to, is letting go. And spiritually letting go and realizing that everything is okay. Regardless of what we're telling ourselves, everything is okay. People will call me in the middle of the night and say, "Ken, the world's falling apart. They heard this on the news. They heard that on the news." And I'll say, "Well, you know, all I know is that we're still spinning on our axis. All the satellites and planets and everything seem to be where they should be. You know, air is still being breathed. Maybe it's just your world that's having all this trouble. Because the world seems to be doing pretty good, you know. Because that's God's deal. And it's nothing short of a miracle that people just all don't go insane. Because they're always taught what? From the time they're old enough to think, you can do this. You can think your way out of this. You can plan this. You can get educated to do this." And your deal is you can't. You just can't. And so the theme of AA has always been, and really was only one theme for any talk, and that is, I can't, he can, I think I'll let him. Because that's really the deal. I read a little mystical poem the other night that I loved, and it says, and it was talking about God, and it says, you cannot catch it, nor can you get rid of it. In not being able to get it, you get it. When you speak, it's silent. When you're silent, it speaks. And you say, wow, you know, that's AA. That's AA. We're chasing after things we're never going to catch because then they haven't gone anywhere. You know, we're trying to get hold of something we already have. That's an amazing thing when you think about it, but don't think too long. You know, don't get in the habit. it develops too quickly, you know. And you say to yourself, geez, you know, out in my area, I get to see all these, you know, I live where, in Southern California where all the crazy people live. And the way they adapt to things, you get a chance to laugh. You know, the T-shirts that are being worn now are these no-fear T-shirts. And the one I like the best, it says, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space, you know. And that's where life should be lived, on the edge, you know. It's not about to be like, I'm going to go back here and try to shelter myself from life. No, it's to go at it. You know, there's no permanence here. Everything is impermanent. There's absolutely no permanence. If there, everything was permanent, we'd be telling each other, don't worry, this too shall last. No. There's no permanence. It's all temporary. And tomorrow it's going to look very different. The cast will be different. You'll be different. You know, and you'll wonder why today you're worried about it. But don't worry, something will replace it. Unless you're doing the things we do here. This is an action program, and the actions are real simple. And that is, I do these steps, and in doing these steps, I get to live life fully for me. And I get to mind my own business. And I get to stay out of other people's way. And I get so that when I see signs on the back of trucks, I understand, you know, I can laugh at them. There's a sign that's real popular out in our area now on the back of trucks, and it says, which way did they go? How fast are they moving? How many are there? I must find them. I am their leader. You know? And I immediately relate that to meetings, you know? And in order to help me to not forget what's so important, instead of having a 2-minute or a 5-minute or a 10-minute meditation period in the morning, I've tried to take things in life and incorporate them into my meditation. My phone is now part of my meditation. Whenever my phone rings, I work where there's a lot of phone ringing, and whenever that phone rings, as soon as I hear it, I say to myself, thank you, God, for keeping me sober today. Your will, not my will, be done. And then I pick up the phone. And I'm a much better person when I pick up the phone. And it reminds me to stay right in that moment. And when I'm at a stop at a red light, instead of seeing it as some big evil, I say the same thing. Thank you, God, for keeping me sober today. Your will, not my will. And I keep adding to that. And it's a constant reminder that I'm here by the grace of God. Nothing more, nothing less. I've been given the gift of sobriety. Now, what I do with that gift is up to me. But I've been given the gift of sobriety. I come from a family of 7. I'm the youngest of 7. There's now only 4 left. We've lost 3 to this thing. I had a sister who died Christmas Day of 1985 with cirrhosis of the liver after hemorrhaging in a New York hospital. And we buried her. Christmas was a Wednesday that year. We buried her Saturday. And I came back to California. And the following week, New Year's Day on Wednesday, my brother died of a convulsion alcohol. We went to funerals where we were stepping over graves that had just been dug to get to graves we were digging. And I understood very quickly that this is all about being here and being alive and being appreciative of the moment. And all I know to share with you is that I don't know. But, you know, we have a big book. It's called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I like to refer to it as the owner's manual, you know. And whenever a question comes up, you just open your owner's manual and you look at it. And you say, the answers are in here. And the answers are in there because what it's talking about in there is there's really only one place for you to be if you're an alcoholic, and that's an Alcoholics Anonymous. you look around this room tonight, you'll never see this group together like this tonight again, anywhere. It's a one-shot deal. That's how impermanent it is. Same people won't be here next year. Some people will come for one reason or another, can't come. There's an illness or they can't make it or whatever. It will never be the same again. So you get to tell people right now, you look them in the eye and you say, I love you. And you let them know where you stand, because it could be tomorrow you don't get a chance to do that. And it's just that. It's a happening. You know, and it's going by every second. And I know there's a 13-step dance, so I won't keep you long. I do know the real world. So start to scope out your targets of opportunity. You know? And I know, I don't know what they play here in the South, but out in our area, they play this country and Western music now. You know? Things like, I'm just 2 6-packs away from loving you. And, so the saddle on the stove, Mama, we're riding the range tonight, you know? You know? And I want to thank you for inviting me to come here, because I love to see people laugh. You know, there isn't a person in this room right now who couldn't, if they wanted to, dwell on something that would make them very sick mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and really believe it's worthwhile. There isn't anyone. And the fact that we don't have to do that is the miracle. We don't have to do that. The miracle of AA is that we can stay sober one day at a time with the power of our lack of understanding even, and be busy doing things that really count. You know? That's why it doesn't make any difference when a 12-step call comes in who we send out, because it's the right person to send. Otherwise, they wouldn't be going. It's always the right person. And you hear some people say, well, I'm not here long enough. I have nothing to give. If you have nothing more to give than a ride to the meeting, that's something. You always have something to give. You know, it's not a deal of undervaluating or over-evaluating who we are. We are neutral. We are here to do God's will. We are here to be of maximum service to one another. And it's not about hurting one another. You know, I look around this room and I look at the international, and I always get the same feeling, is that it could be this way all the time. You know, it could be this way all the time. We wouldn't have to be picking on each other, noticing each other's difference. It could just be a relaxed atmosphere where we allow each other to grow at their own space and their own period of time, and not get caught up in a lot of nonsense. But unfortunately, sometimes we forget that. That's why you have to keep coming back. You have to be reminded. This is too important to let go. I love being sober. I don't want to go back to drinking, not because I'm afraid of what I'll get back, but I'm more afraid of what I'll give up. This is the very best it's ever been for me. You know, I can look people in the eye today. When the phone rings, I answer it. You know, I can talk to anybody on the phone. There's nobody has a warrant for me today. You know, there's nobody looking for me. I didn't do something yesterday that I got to be ashamed of today. And it's a real nice, comfortable feeling. And it's not about accumulating anything. Talk to the old timers about that. They'll tell you that it doesn't make any difference what happens. It's not what happens, it's what you do about what happens. You know, when things go down the tubes, you don't have to go with them. And one of the things I learned along the way, and I loved it because I love visuals. You know, I have things in my house. I have a clown that laughs, and I have a chicken that says, wow, you know, and guys call me and tell me what's going on in their love life. Wow, you know. She did what? Wow, you know. You said what? Wow, you know. And it's a little 60s chicken with glasses and a guitar, and it's my alarm clock, actually. And it just makes people laugh. You know, they're right in the middle of telling you something real heavy, and you push that thing, it just wipes them out. And once you hear them laugh, you know they're okay, you know, because people want to laugh. They just don't think there's anything to laugh about. They think it's too serious. It's like, well, it's not the way I remember it. No, and it never was, you know. You know? I don't know about you, but I remember doing that Operation Desert Storm. I came to the realization that I was a Baghdad drinker. You know, I was bombed regularly and blacked out frequently. You know, I didn't remember most things, you know. When I first started being asked to share somewhere, I thought, well, what will I say? First of all, I don't remember anything. And the stuff I remember most vividly never happened. And so, like, what kind of a story is that? You know, like, you don't have a story, you know. That, it's just gone. And then, you know, when you're always counting on people to catch you up on what you did. And as I said, I love to hear people laugh because there's something about people when they start to laugh, something happens. Something happens. And, you know, I know God has a good sense of humor because he gave man his sexual peak at 20 and woman has at 40. And he says, go ahead, kids, work with that, you know. And so you say, everything around us is funny. You know, everything around us is funny if you just see it that way. You know, I have guys that will look at me and they'll just start laughing. You know, we do things at meetings like, you know, if before the meeting starts, we'll call each other on the cups. And new people will be looking, going, wow, you know, they're looking for strings and batteries. And the whole idea is, you know, you snare them then because they're wondering what's going on. So you get them with the cups a little off balance, and then you say, the fish in the sea are not thirsty. You own that person for a week. You know, they're like... You know how newcomers are, you know. They kind of have that look like a dog on the interstate, you know. Like, you know, like, there it is. I don't know. But I'm going to not let them know I don't know. I'm going to pretend like I do. Hope they don't find out I don't know. Hope nobody asks any questions. And even the test we give them, the more you say no, the more you lie, you know. It's great. You know, did you ever do this? No. Okay, you're a liar, you know. And you don't have to tell them that. He already figured that out, you know. I mean, I went from a guy who used to find things before people officially lost them to someone who has a job, you know, like to someone who has a job. I mean, it's an amazing process. Just an amazing process. I mean, and I had a guy break into my room on a convention a couple of months ago, and anyway, I threw a comforter over his head, knocked him over an end table, and he was going to intimidate me. I thought that was comical. He said, there's a guy outside with a gun, and he's going to come in and shoot you. And I said, pal, the deadbolt's on. No one's coming in. I said, and you ain't getting out. And I had this comforter over him, and every time he stood up, I knocked him over again. So after he let go of the few things he had picked up, I opened the door and pulled the comforter off her and let him go. And I thought, boy, that's a lot of spiritual growth for me. You know, there was an ashtray there. There was a time I would have beat that guy silly. Instead, I didn't want to hurt him. I just didn't want to get hurt. You know, I was in that state of neutrality. The woman who was with me was petrified. And when the police came, the guy said to me, how did you know to do that? And I said, well, I intuitively know, sir, because that's one of the promises. And that was the first time I saw her smile in about an hour, you know. Like, I intuitively knew what to do, you know. But that's the deal here. You don't want to hurt. You don't want to get hurt. You just want to be in that state of neutrality. You just want to live and let live, you know, and life gets real easy. I want to thank you for inviting me here. I'm going to tell you a little story, and then I'm going to sit down. And this story has to do with my mom. My mom raised 7 kids. She was a straight-up broad. I mean, she just raised these kids and did all the right things. And my dad died from booze when we were young. And she used to tell this story, and I love this story. And my mom had an Irish brogue, so it even embellished it a little bit. But she used to tell this story about Johnny. And Johnny had a very simple spiritual program. He used to go to a parochial school, and next to parochial schools is a church. It's like a captive audience, you know. And Johnny would go to this school in the morning, and before school started, he'd run over to the church, and he'd kneel down, and he'd say, hello, God, this is Johnny. I just want to tell you I'm here. And then he'd run off and go to school. And then he'd bug over there at noontime and after school, And then he'd do that on the weekends, and he'd do it during the summer and over the holidays. And it was a very simple spiritual program. Hello, God, this is Johnny. I just want to tell you I'm here. And when he got to be 12 years old, Johnny contracted polio, and at that time they had no cure for polio. And as he was in a room and he was dying and he was surrounded by his friends and his chums and his schoolmates and his family, my mom said a voice was heard to say, "Hello, Johnny, this is God. I just want to tell you I'm here." And when you look at Alcoholics Anonymous broken down to its simplest point, that's the point. God is telling us he's here. He's always been here. Our job is nothing more and nothing less than to seek out the person who has all power. And that one is God. May you find him now. God bless you, and thank you for inviting me.